Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 35th episode of Robots. In today's episode, we deal with the question of communication, what it means, where it comes from, and how it can be applied to robotics. We first speak with Sarah Mitri, whose research spans both robotics and evolutionary biology, and tries to answer basic questions on how communication was developed many millennia ago, using high-tech robotics of the 21st century as tools. We then speak with Professor Jürgen Jost, who is director of two research groups at the Max Planck Institute for Mathematics in the Sciences. He'll be giving us thoughts on the intentionality of robot communication.
Be sure to stick around after the show to discover the winner of last week's contest on invention and the proud recipient of a box of the finest homemade Swiss chocolate. Before we begin, though, let's hear the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. U.S. company Boston Dynamics, which you may know for its impressively stable walking big dog robot, has released a small four-wheeled jumping robot. For the most part, the precision urban hopper slightly resembles and very much moves like a remote-controlled car. However, its uniqueness is revealed when it reaches obstacles such as a wall or a fence on its way. Using a piston-actuated leg at its center, the robot can launch itself high into the air, clearing obstacles of up to 7.5 meters or 25 feet in height to continue its route. The Precision Urban Hopper, funded by U.S. research agency DARPA, is expected to be enlisted sometime in late 2010 and will primarily boost troops' reconnaissance capabilities. Electronics giant Panasonic has built the world's first robotic bed. The futuristic bed consists of a motorized base and a robotic canopy with a screen that acts as TV, controller for home appliances, and home security camera viewer. Users can remain in bed while the canopy swings away and the top half of the mattress rises while the other half lowers, transforming the bed into a wheelchair. While in chair mode, the robot can detect people and obstacles and help users avoid collisions. The robotic bed is another step in Japan's ongoing efforts to use robotics to offer more freedom and independence to its rapidly aging population. In an inspiring example of merging hobbyist robotics and arts with a useful do-it-yourself approach, robot builder Carl has built a tandem bike partner. Jules is a silvery, shiny humanoid driven by an electric PMG 132 motor that will take the back seat of your tandem and do all the pedaling. For impressive videos of Jules and the Boston Dynamics Precision Urban Hopper, as well as the new robot bed, visit the robots forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Sarah Mitri is a researcher working in collaboration with both the Robotics-Oriented Laboratory of Intelligent Systems, led by Professor Floriano at the EPFL in Switzerland, and the Biology-Oriented Group Keller at the University of Lausanne. Her recent articles in Current Biology and PNAS have been receiving a lot of media attention because of their insights on the interactions between genetic relatedness and reliability of communication. Let's hear what Mitri has to say.
Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the Robots Podcast.
Hi.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So right now I'm a PhD student and I work together with two professors, a robotics professor, Dario Floriano, and an evolutionary biologist, Laurent Keller. So my work is sort of in between these two domains.
Tell us maybe about your work a little bit. What are you, you're interested in communication, but you're using robots to learn this. How do these come together?
Exactly. So the idea is to try and answer questions in evolutionary biology. So to try and understand how communication evolves in animals. And the way we do this is that we use robots as a model of animals. and we evolve the behavior of the robots in order to understand how animal communication might have evolved.
So Sarah, tell us a little bit about biology and what communication means in a biological sense.
So I guess communication is really common in the animal world. So you have a lot of animals that communicate, I guess all animals probably. So any social animal, so between humans to bacteria, you really see communication everywhere. And it has a lot of different functions. So, for example, there are a lot of animals that communicate in order to forage. So maybe they'll tell other animals in their group where to find the food. Or you could have communication for mating, for example. So to be able to choose an individual to mate with. There's also communication in competitions, so for territorial defense. So there's really a lot of different types of communication. You can have communication over visual signals or over sound or through chemicals. Like a lot of insects use chemicals to communicate. So it's really very, very widespread with a lot of different forms. So that makes it really interesting to study because there are so many different forms of it.
Where did communication come from in the beginning? Or I guess this is a bit of an open question, but where do you think was the beginning of communication?
So I guess it's not really clear yet how communication evolves exactly, but one idea is that it evolves through some cues in the environment. So a cue is something that you emit that didn't evolve because of its function as a signal, so because of its communicative function, but for other reasons. So, for example, if you imagine a monkey that finds a food and then it gets really excited and it cries out, and so this cry was not initially intended to tell other monkeys that monkey found the food, but the effect of that cry is that the other monkeys hear the cry and come towards the food, and that creates a lot of competition. So the monkey that originally cried might change its behavior in the future and try to suppress this cry, for example. So there's a whole dynamics that you get between certain signals that evolve and how the receiving behavior of other individuals shapes the signal.
Okay. Maybe before we get into the robotics, what kind of questions are you looking at in the evolution of communication?
So we're trying to look into how honest or deceptive communication systems evolve and what are the factors that result in one or the other evolving.
Okay, so where do the robots come in then? Why don't you go just out in the field and study frogs or study other animals? Why do you need robots and why are robots interesting?
So a lot of people do that, right? A lot of people study communication in the wild or in the lab. The problem with this is that often you can't really watch these communication systems while they evolve because obviously the generation times of a lot of animals are really long, especially highly social animals. So some people look at bacteria. So those are also social organisms that communicate, and there the generation time is relatively short, so you can do sort of evolutionary experiments and watch how their communication systems are evolving. But that is often also really difficult because there are so many things in the bacteria that influence their communication systems that you can't really control. So as an experimenter, you can't change all the parameters as much as you would want. You can't manipulate the behavior of the bacteria. So what we are trying to do is to use a model where you can manipulate all these things and where you also have sort of the fossil record of communication. So you can look at different generations and how communication was changing in those different generations and try and understand its evolution. So that's where the robots come in. So we are evolving the behavior of robots. So not only their communication behavior, but their behavior in general. So for example, we use a system where the robots have to forage for food and they can use communication in order to enhance their foraging abilities. So to forage as a group, not just as individuals. And through this experiment, we can evolve the behavior of the robots over many generations and watch how they are using signals in order to influence each other and in order to forage better.
So this is really interesting. This is a series of experiments that's been getting a lot of press lately. And Can you maybe explain it a little bit more to our listeners what these experiments are like? So what kind of robots do you use? How do you evolve them? What kind of behaviors do you get at it? And what are you expecting to get out of it?
Sure. So the robots are basically small, maybe 15 centimeters diameter, more or less. They have wheels and they have cameras on the top of them with which they can see other robots that are lighting up. So the experiments are usually run in the dark. So you can only see other robots if they're emitting light. So as I said, the robots can also emit light. So it's always this blue light. And the experimental setup, so as I said, it's a foraging task. So you have like an object that's placed in one corner of the arena that's lighting up in red, and that's the food. Then there's another object at the other side of the arena, which is also red, and that one's the poison. So generally, you put the robots in the middle of the arena, and what they have to do is they have to find the food and avoid the poison. So if they get close to the food, then they get plus points. If they end up by the poison, they get minus points. And at the beginning, of course, they don't know which is which because all they can see is these two red lights and they have to drive towards them. And only when they touch them, that's when they can distinguish whether this is food or poison. Now, the lights that the robots can use, so a robot at any point in time can decide to light up in blue. If it does, then other robots that are in the arena can also see it and maybe use this blue light in order to try and navigate, so to try and understand whether this blue light means that another robot has found food, or maybe it means that another robot is lost. Or so the way that in which the robots use the blue light depends on their behavior, on how their behavior has evolved. So what do I mean by evolution? Well, the idea is that we have a population of lots of robots, and each robot in the population has a different behavior. Now you let these robots run, so you put them in groups and you let them run around the arena for about a minute, and then you measure how many points they've collected, right? And depending on how many points they've collected, so how much time they spent at the food versus the poison, you can rank the robots, and then you select the best robots, and those best robots survive to the next generation. So at the beginning, in the first generation, these robots are completely, they just do random stuff. They don't really do anything intelligent. They don't always forage at the food. Maybe half of them end up at the poison. But you still select the ones that end up at the food. Those survive to the next generation. You take those, so the programs describing their behavior, you change them a little bit. So this is to simulate mutations. And then at the next generation, you just do the same thing over again. So you let them run in groups, and then you can select the best robots, etc. And we do this over a few hundred generations. And after these generations, you can look at the way in which the robots are behaving. Usually they forage quite well. They only go to the food. They rarely go to the poison. And they use the blue lights in order to find the food faster.
So it seems that they involve communication, just like you said. Because I guess, is there any other way that they could figure out that one red light is the poison and one red light is the food? Other than communication, I guess not.
Well, they could just go there, right? They could just go to one light, and then once they know it's a poison, they go to the other one. So that's also a strategy, except it's just you're not as good at foraging as when they use communication. So we also did some experiments just to find out how well they could forage without the blue light. It also works, just not as well.
Okay, so it seems that communication does evolve. What kind of interesting things did you find out? What types of communication did you see, for example?
What was interesting was that we found that certain parameters that influence communication in real animals seem to also influence communication in our robots. So one interesting thing that we found was that the relatedness between robots in a group had an influence on the type of communication that evolved. So we found that if you had robots that were clones within one group, then you would get honest communication evolving. So basically, if they were all related, they were all from the same family, they all had the same genomes, then you had really good communication that evolved. They always lit up around the food, and this blue light around the food attracted the other robots, and they drove towards it, and it was a happy ending. On the other hand, if you have unrelated robots, so that all have different programs that are driving their behavior, then you see a lot of conflict. So they're basically, all these robots are in competition to survive to the next generation. So if they're clones, they're not in competition because it doesn't matter whether one individual or the other survives to the next generation. Whereas if they're different, then they are in competition for survival. And what happens in this case is that we found that robots would stop signaling by the food. So they would try as much as possible to reduce their signaling around the food and instead signal in other areas of the arena. So they were basically distracting the other robots so that they were less efficient at finding the food.
What relation do you think this has to biology? Because what you just said, it's a result that seems to have been published a lot lately. People are talking about lying robots and cheating robots and all that. What kind of lessons do you learn from this? And how do you think this applies to biology, if at all? How can it be taken back?
Well, there are a few things to say there. First, I should point out that it's not really lying. It's not deception. Because deception, it would only be deception if they were really making it worse for the other robots. But we found that basically they're just hiding the information. They're not deceiving as much as it's just a reduction in information. So there's still more information there to find the food than if you would have no light at all. So I couldn't say that they were deceiving, but you still have a lot of parallels in the real world, so in the animal world, of this suppression of information. So if you imagine a chameleon that is hiding from its predators, then if a chameleon would just have any color, then it would probably stand out against the background of the forest. And what it does is the chameleon evolves to be able to change its color so that there's less information, so that it blends into the background. So it's kind of suppressing the information of its location so that its predator doesn't find it. Another example would be birds that are trying to hide the food that they have found from other birds. So instead of, visibly hiding it where other birds would find it, they would go and hide it somewhere where it's less obvious. Or if a monkey finds a source of food, it could either cry out out of, excitement, or it could try and suppress this cry so that other monkeys in its group don't come and find it as well. So you see these scenarios of competition and how animals also have evolved to suppress information. And these are kind of parallels that we find in the robots. On the other hand, you also find communication systems in nature where animals are highly related. And in those cases, the communication systems are more reliable. So if you think of pheromone trails in ants where they leave the pheromone for other ants so that they can find the path to the food. So that is an example of a more reliable communication system. So our results basically predict when you would find reliable communication systems and when you wouldn't.
Okay, maybe as a kind of to wrap this up question, how would this, you're speaking a lot about using robots for biology, but do you think your research can also be applied to robotics and to design communication systems for robotics? Or are robots really, in your case, just being used as a tool, just like mathematics or anything else? What are you bringing to robotics?
So my personal interest is in biology. So for me, it's really about finding out or answering questions in biology. However, I think there are also lessons for roboticists in our work, especially if you're going to use evolutionary algorithms to evolve behavior in groups of robots. So this is generally quite a complex problem, actually, designing collective robotic systems, because sometimes you know what kind of global behavior you want, but then it's difficult to go and program the individual behavior of robots. So if you're working with groups of robots, swarms of robots, then one good way of determining what behavior every individual should do, you use evolutionary algorithms. And if you're going to use such evolutionary algorithms on groups of robots, then our results show that it's a bad idea if you use unrelated robots. So if you have heterogeneous robots, so where each robot has a different program, because you would expect these robots to evolve conflicting interests, or they have conflicting interests, so they won't evolve to cooperate. So if you want your group of robots to cooperate, then you're better off using related robots.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for being with us. That was a very interesting interview.
Thank you.
Sabine met our next guest, Jürgen Jost, at the European Conference on Complex Systems, which took place last week in Warwick, United Kingdom. He's the director of a couple groups at the Max Planck Institute for Mathematics and the Sciences in Leipzig, Germany. As a specialist in complex systems, and in particular, complex structures in biology and cognition, he's been looking at all sorts of communication modalities and raises the interesting question, can robots communicate? And is the communication intentional?
Hi, Jürgen. Welcome to Robots.
Hi, thanks.
So you're looking at if robots can communicate. Maybe first, what is communication?
Yeah, communication is something where you get very different answers if you ask different people. If you talk to a neuroscientist, he says neurons are communicating via synapses. If you talk to a biologist, he tells me how ants are communicating in an ant pile or how bees are communicating about giving information about food sources and how to get there to their fellow bees. Then if you talk to people that study the behavior of chimpanzees, they have a certain notion of communication. And if you talk to social scientists or psychologists or whatever, and they say that in a certain sense only humans can communicate, and what these animals or these neurons are doing is not really communication. And of course, on one hand, this is bewildering, this diversity of communications, but on the other hand, it's also very helpful because then we can identify the different aspects or different levels or layers of communication. And when we understand that, then we can ask, where do robots fit in according to the capacities that they presently have or that we can conceive that they will have in the near future? To what extent can they communicate?
And so what are the different levels?
Different levels, first of all, is that there's a capacity to interpret some signal. That signal by itself need not yet be a communication. When you see a gray cloud and you interpret that as a sign that it will probably rain. Then the next step is that somebody produces such a sign as a signal to trigger a certain behavior by you, that you react in a certain way. And so, first of all, you have the interest to react to the information that you gather, and then some other entity, person, or whatever has a intention to provide you with certain bits of information so that you, upon receiving this information, act in a certain way, which would then be in the interest of the sender. So this is a basic structure of communication.
And so how can robots communicate?
Well, at that level they can communicate. It is just not clear to which extent we can assign them intentions, because as I said, the sender has the intention that I, as a receiver of the signal, behave in a certain way. And robots can transmit information. So famous experiments where robots just flash some light in order to indicate a food source, and other robots see that and they also gather there, and then the colony as a whole benefits because then the total food intake of the colony is higher than without that signaling scheme. The question is whether the robots that are flashing the light somehow have the intention to produce that as a signal to trigger a certain behavior of the other robots. Probably at the moment they are not yet complex enough so that we can really ascribe some intentions, but at least then this is embedded in an evolutionary scheme. So at an evolutionary level or so, they may have some kind of intention in quotation marks. But even giving them intentions may not be completely out of the question, because if you play chess against a chess program, of course you can say, well, it's just physical system or it's just a computer program, or so it doesn't have intentions. But when you play against them, then somehow this program is doing similar things that you're also doing. It is somehow looking at possible moves, what the consequences of the possible moves will be, whether they will gain your queen or whether they will get checkmated or whatever. And then they evaluate these possible moves on the basis of a certain goal that they have, namely to win the game. So in practice, when you interact with them, then somehow you would like to ascribe some intentions, namely the intention to win the game, and to carry that out by analyzing counterfactual scenarios, possible worlds. And again, this is a level where there's no obstacle that we can also bring robots to.
So would you say that intention is a prerequisite for communication? Because then I'm thinking neurons have no intention.
Neurons have no intention, and so they have then only a very limited level of communication. So we try to understand the different levels of communication, just from the simple exchange of information to the intention to influence the behavior of some other entity by giving that other entity selected bits or pieces of information.
And why are you interested in the robots aspect?
In fact, I'm interested in communication in general, and the robots are the example where one could probably best try that out. Yeah, the other biological systems you can essentially only observe, but robots you can simulate, or you can even have real robots and then see what happens, whether you can bring them to certain levels of communication, whether you can bring them to a level where you would interpret the behavior in such a way that one robot has the intention to give some information to another robot to trigger a certain behavior by that other robot.
So speaking of simulation, maybe we can dive into some of the experiments that you've conducted. What type of experiments have you looked at?
Now, at the moment, there's one computer scientist in my group, Ralph Dare, who does very interesting simulation experiments with robots that try to explore the world. They have a natural sense of curiosity. They have only very limited sensory information. When then two of them get together, both want to explore the world and bring themselves in a situation where they can predict as much as possible about the world. That is the key. When you don't do anything, then of course you can predict everything, but what you predict is very little. If you're in a situation where everything looks chaotic, then of course the world is very rich, the dynamics of the world is very rich, but you can't predict anything. So they want to bring themselves in situations where they can predict a lot.
And how do they achieve this?
Through some kind of sensory motor loop. So they try to explore the environment and shape the environment or so in such a way that much happens in the environment, but which they can also then interpret and predict. And then the interesting things happen when two of such robots get together. Then they produce very complex behavior. It looks often quite funny in the simulations when they fall over each other and all that. It essentially looks like sometimes like wrestling behavior between those robots. But this comes from their drive to create dynamics that they can then predict. And of course, two of them are interfering with each other, then this becomes quite complex, and maybe in the end, then neither of them can predict anything. But that then would be a first step, because they're already interacting with each other. Each of them is reacting to information that it receives from the other one via the sensory input. And then the next step would be that they then also produce certain signals on purpose, so to influence the other one, and then in particular be better able to predict the other one, because the other one is reacting to the signal produced by the first one. And so this would be, I think, a very interesting road towards understanding communication in robots.
So they have to learn a language based on interactions, basically.
Yeah, some kind of maybe code or so. Maybe it's not really a language in the sense that we would call it. It's some codes that might emerge.
And do you intend on looking at the intentionality in here?
Yeah, essentially, of course, I want to bring them up to a level where when I just observe and interpret their behavior, the best way of describing the behavior would be in terms of intentions. It's, of course, a difficult question in which sense they really have intentions. But I first want to describe their behavior.
Okay, do you have any projects for the future in this area, in other experiments, for example?
we want to look at communication at all levels. So we are systematically also working on neurons, communicating neurons, learning processes in neurons, then also some kinds of intentions that they want to interpret their input. Then we also look at experiments we conduct psychological research with humans. We also want to understand their communications, and we look at computer programs, how they could possibly interpret language, and then of course we want to pursue this line of research of simulating robots, and perhaps even also look at technically implemented robots.
Is there one thing which you find across all these examples, maybe something which emerges from all of these?
At the moment we find how much human communication is superior to all other forms of communication, be it animal communication or be it robot communication, at least at the level that can presently be achieved.
One final question. Do you think robots could ever achieve this human complexity in the language?
Why not?
Thanks a lot, Jürgen, for being here with us on Robots.
It was a great pleasure for me.
Before we finish today's show, it's time to announce the winner of last week's contest. In celebration of the spirit of invention, we asked what you think is the world's greatest invention. Although there's definitely no right answer to this one, we were quite convinced by Croyno's selection of the scientific method, which is, in the end, the basis of most of our world's inventions, especially the latest ones. So congratulations, Croyno, you've won yourself some Swiss chocolate. Send us an email with your address to claim your prize. And that's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, as always, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. And of course, don't forget to stop by the forum for discussion on today's show and other hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Communicate with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.